My name is Kale Voss, Rigger Sergeant of Extraction Platform Tarvos 5, and I am documenting what may be our final transmissions from the ocean world of Pelagios Prime. The Emperor's light feels distant here, cast through perpetual storm clouds that roll across endless gray waters. 3 months have passed since our last supply vessel arrived, 3 months since we've met our Promethium quotas, and 3 months since anyone from the Adeptus Munitorum has bothered to acknowledge our increasingly desperate Vox transmissions. The platform creaks beneath my feet as I make my morning inspection rounds. Its massive adamantium struts groaning against the constant battering of waves that seem to grow more violent with each passing day. What was once a proud imperial extraction facility now resembles a rust-stained monument to neglect. The yellow and black hazard stripes that once marked safety zones have faded to pale suggestions of their former warnings, and the Aquila emblems welded to the central command tower show deep pitting from the salt spray. Our crew of 47 souls has dwindled in spirit, if not in number. The men move through their duties with the hollow-eyed determination of the forgotten, their Imperial Navy-issued coveralls hanging loose on frames that grow thinner by the week. The corpse starch rations that should sustain us ran out 18 days ago, despite my careful rationing. The emergency stores yielded nothing but empty containers and the bitter taste of bureaucratic failure. Desperation drives men to strange solutions. I discovered Jorik Thane, one of my most reliable maintenance techs, hanging upside down from the platform's edge yesterday morning, his safety harness straining as he scraped barnacles from the support struts with a plasma cutter set to its lowest setting. The creatures had grown thick as armor plating on the underwater sections of our facility, their shells ranging from pale white to deep purple, some as large as a man's fist. When cooked over the heat exchangers, they provided protein that kept us functional, though the taste reminded me of recycled lubricant mixed with brine. The kelp forests that surrounded our platform had become another source of sustenance, though harvesting them required dangerous dives in the churning waters. Mendax, our former cook, had taken to preparing the stringy green vegetation in ways that almost made it palatable, seasoning it with whatever chemicals he could safely extract from our supply lockers. The irony was not lost on me that we had become scavengers on a world we were meant to strip of its resources. Our Vox array continued its automated distress signals, broadcasting on all Imperial frequencies with mechanical persistence. Each morning I climbed the communication tower, checking connections and adjusting the transmission array, hoping for any response from the orbital station that hung somewhere above the perpetual cloud cover. The silence that greeted my efforts had become as constant as the sound of waves against our hull. I had begun to wonder if Pelagios Prime had been forgotten entirely, written off in some distant administratum ledger as an acceptable loss. The drilling operations that gave our platform purpose had become a source of growing concern. The deep bore extractors that should have been pulling refined promethium from the ocean floor instead brought up thick, viscous sludge that bore no resemblance to the fuel that powered the Imperium. The substance was black as the void between stars, with an oily consistency that clung to everything it touched. When exposed to air, it gave off a smell that reminded me of burned flesh mixed with industrial solvent. Purification systems, designed to process standard promethium extraction, could not handle this strange material. It clogged the intake filters within hours, backing up through the processing pipes and coating the interior mechanisms with a residue that resisted all our cleaning efforts. Harwick, our chief engineer, had taken to manually clearing the blockages twice daily, emerging from the maintenance shafts covered in the black substance and cursing the machine spirits that seemed to have abandoned us. The drilling heads themselves showed signs of unusual wear, their adamantium teeth dulled and pitted after contact with whatever lay beneath the ocean floor. I had ordered deeper penetration, thinking we might break through to cleaner deposits, but each additional meter brought only more of the black sludge. The extraction quotas that the Adeptus Munitorum expected from us had become impossible to meet, though I continued to file the required reports into the void of our non-functional communications. Sleep came poorly to most of the crew. I often found men gathered in small groups during off shifts, their voices low as they spoke of home worlds they might never see again. Some had taken to carving aquilas into the metal walls of their quarters, rough approximations of the imperial symbol that seemed to provide comfort in our isolation. Others had begun obsessive maintenance rituals, cleaning and recleaning equipment that functioned perfectly well, as if keeping busy might ward off the growing sense that we had been abandoned. The platform's stabilizer systems had begun showing intermittent failures over the past week. I felt the subtle shifts in our position, the way the deck plates would suddenly cant a few degrees before the gyroscopic systems corrected our orientation. Each time it happened, I imagined the massive anchor chains that held us in position straining against forces they were never designed to handle. The engineering manual spoke of acceptable tolerances and safety margins, but those calculations assumed regular maintenance and proper supply lines. Paranoia had begun to take hold among some of the crew. Vex, a junior rigger who had always been reliable, started reporting strange readings on his instruments that no one else could verify. He claimed the sonar arrays were detecting movement in the deep water beneath us, massive shapes that appeared and disappeared from the screens like phantoms. When I checked the equipment myself, I found nothing but the usual scatter patterns from fish schools and thermal layers. The weather had grown increasingly violent, as if Pelagio's prime itself had turned against us. Storm systems that should have passed in hours now lingered for days, battering our platform with winds that howled through the superstructure and waves that crashed over our lower decks with increasing frequency. The meteorological equipment registered pressure drops that made no sense according to the seasonal patterns in our databases. Food had become an obsession for all of us. Every conversation eventually turned to what we might eat next, where we might find additional sources of nutrition, how long our current supplies might last. The barnacles and kelp provided basic sustenance, but our bodies craved the fats and proteins that only proper rations could supply. I found myself calculating and recalculating our consumption rates, trying to stretch our meager resources while maintaining the crew's ability to function. The black sludge had begun appearing in places it should not have been. I discovered traces of it in the water recycling systems, despite the fact that those pipes ran nowhere near the drilling operations. The substance seemed to seep through barriers that should have contained it, appearing as dark stains on bulkheads and pooling in corners where no extraction equipment operated. When I ordered samples taken for analysis, our basic testing equipment could identify nothing beyond its obvious non-promethium composition. Each night brought new sounds from the platform's structure, groans and creaks that spoke of metal under stress. The support struts that extended down into the dark water transmitted vibrations that had no obvious source, rhythmic pulses that seemed to come from the ocean floor itself. I told myself these were normal settling sounds, the natural response of our facility to the constant motion of the sea, but the patterns seemed too regular to be random. The crew's faith in our eventual rescue had begun to waver. Men who had served the Emperor faithfully for years started questioning why no help had come, why our distress signals went unanswered, why the Imperium seemed to have forgotten our existence. I maintained discipline through routine and the authority of my rank, but I could see doubt growing in their eyes like a disease that spread through close quarters. Our position on Pelagio's prime had always been precarious, a single platform surrounded by thousands of kilometers of empty ocean. The nearest Imperial facility lay on the far side of the planet, connected to us only by Vox transmissions and supply runs that arrived with clockwork regularity until they simply stopped. The isolation that had once seemed manageable now felt like a prison sentence handed down by an indifferent bureaucracy. The platform systems continued their slow degradation. Warning lights that should have been repaired flickered constantly, casting red shadows across work areas where men struggled to maintain equipment with dwindling supplies. The air recycling units worked harder to process the increasingly humid atmosphere, their filters clogged with salt particles, and the strange vapors that rose from our failed drilling operations. I stood on the observation deck as another day died into the gray twilight that passed for night on Pelagio's prime, watching the endless procession of waves that surrounded our artificial island. Somewhere beyond the horizon lay the rest of the Imperium, worlds where citizens lived and died in service to the Emperor, where supply ships departed on schedule and communications networks functioned as designed. That universe felt as distant as the stars hidden behind the perpetual cloud cover that shrouded our world in eternal gloom. The storm struck during the early hours of the third day after my barnacle scraping discovery, arriving with the sudden violence that marked all weather systems on Pelagio's prime. I had been checking the drilling manifolds when the first massive wave crashed over the platform's eastern edge, sending torrents of frigid seawater cascading across the deck plates. The impact shuddered through the entire structure, causing the lights in the processing bay to flicker and casting dancing shadows across the walls slick with condensation. Within minutes, the wind had risen to a howling crescendo that made communication impossible without shouting directly into someone's ear. The platform's stabilizer systems, already showing signs of strain from weeks of neglect, began their desperate struggle against forces that seemed determined to tear us from our moorings. I felt the deck shift beneath my feet as the gyroscopic compensators engaged, their massive mechanical hearts working overtime to keep us level against the increasingly violent seas. The emergency klaxons began their wailing chorus as the first stabilizer array failed completely. The sound cut through the storm's roar like a blade, its urgent tone speaking of systems pushed beyond their operational limits. Red warning lights bathed the corridors in hellish illumination as I made my way toward the control center, grabbing handholds and support struts to keep from being thrown against the bulkheads by the platform's increasingly erratic movements. Harwick met me at the central monitoring station, his face pale beneath the grime that had become our permanent uniform. His hands moved across the control panels with practiced urgency, but the readouts told a story of cascading failures that no amount of technical expertise could prevent. The primary stabilizer had seized completely, its internal mechanisms locked in a position that left us vulnerable to every wave that struck our hull. The secondary systems were cycling through emergency protocols, their performance degrading with each passing minute as they struggled to compensate for their failed counterpart. The platform began to list noticeably toward the northeast, its massive bulk tilting into the waves that crashed over our lower decks with increasing frequency. The angle was subtle at first, perhaps 5 degrees from true horizontal, but I could feel it in my bones as gravity seemed to shift beneath us. Tools that had been secured in their proper places began sliding across work surfaces, and the water that accumulated in corners now pooled against walls that should have remained vertical. I organized repair crews from the men who remained functional, dividing them into teams based on their skills and the urgency of our various crises. The flooding in the lower sections demanded immediate attention, as seawater had begun pouring through compromised seals and overwhelmed drainage systems. The pumps that should have handled normal water intrusion were failing one by one, their intake filters clogged with debris and the mysterious black sludge that seemed to contaminate everything it touched. Mendax led a group of maintenance workers into the flooded sections, their emergency breathing apparatus allowing them to work in spaces where the air had been displaced by rising water. They moved through knee-deep brine that sloshed violently with each movement of the platform, their headlamps cutting through the murky darkness to illuminate control panels and machinery that had never been designed for submersion. The work was dangerous and exhausting, requiring constant vigilance against electrical hazards and the risk of being trapped by sudden surges of incoming water. The evacuation of critical machinery became our highest priority as more sections of the lower deck succumbed to flooding. Equipment that represented years of imperial investment had to be abandoned to the rising waters, their complex mechanisms doomed to corrosion and failure. The promethium processing units, already compromised by the black sludge that clogged their systems, disappeared beneath the surface with mechanical death rattles that spoke of gears grinding to a halt and circuits shorting in showers of sparks. Our operational capacity plummeted toward zero as each piece of abandoned equipment took with it some essential function of the platform. The water recycling systems failed when their pumps were submerged, forcing us to rely on emergency reserves that would last perhaps a week under normal consumption. The heating elements that kept our living spaces habitable began failing as moisture invaded their control circuits, leaving us shivering in quarters that grew colder with each passing hour. The crew's psychological state deteriorated as rapidly as our mechanical systems. Men who had maintained discipline through months of hardship began showing signs of panic as they realized the scope of our crisis. Beck started reporting phantom readings on instruments that had been flooded hours earlier, insisting that something was moving beneath the platform, despite the obvious impossibility of obtaining sonar data from submerged equipment. His paranoia infected others, creating an atmosphere of suspicion and fear that made coordinated work increasingly difficult. Arguments broke out over the rationing of our remaining supplies, heated exchanges that revealed how thin our veneer of civilization had become. Thane accused Jorik of hoarding food rations, while others whispered that someone among us was deliberately sabotaging our repair efforts. The accusations flew without evidence or logic, driven by hunger and desperation rather than any rational assessment of our situation. I found myself mediating disputes that threatened to escalate into violence, using my authority as rigor sergeant to maintain order among men who had begun viewing each other as potential threats. The emergency beacon continued its automated broadcasts into the storm-lashed darkness above, but our expectations of rescue had dimmed to almost nothing. The Vox array showed no signs of incoming transmissions, no acknowledgement from orbital stations or passing vessels that might carry word of our plight to Imperial authorities. The silence from the outside universe had become absolute, as if Pelagio's prime had been excised from all Imperial records and left to drift forgotten in the void between more important worlds. My growing suspicion that our predicament extended beyond mere mechanical failure began to crystallize as I examined the damage patterns throughout the platform. The flooding should have been random, following the path of least resistance through compromised seals and structural weaknesses. Instead, the water seemed to be entering through specific points that suggested deliberate damage rather than natural deterioration. Bulkheads that should have been watertight showed signs of stress fractures that followed no pattern I could identify from the engineering manuals. The stabilizer failure itself defied easy explanation. The massive gyroscopic systems had been built to withstand forces far greater than anything a natural storm could generate, their adamantium construction and redundant safety systems designed to function for decades without major maintenance. Yet the primary unit had seized as if its internal mechanisms had been subjected to stresses that exceeded all design parameters. The metal showed signs of fatigue that should have taken years to develop, compressed into what appeared to be hours of catastrophic wear. The anchor chains that held us in position transmitted vibrations through the platform's structure that felt increasingly unnatural. The rhythm of their movement against the ocean floor had changed from the random patterns of storm-driven motion to something that suggested external force. When I pressed my hand against the support struts that extended down into the dark water, I could feel pulses that seemed too regular to be caused by wave action or thermal expansion. The metal itself seemed to be responding to influences that originated far below our position. The black sludge that continued to emerge from our drilling operations had begun appearing in locations that made no logical sense. I discovered traces of it in the upper levels of the platform, areas that had no connection to the extraction systems and lay far above the waterline. The substance seemed to defy gravity and containment protocols, seeping through barriers that should have been impermeable and appearing as dark stains on surfaces that had been clean hours before. Its presence created an atmosphere of contamination that went beyond mere mechanical failure. The storm showed no signs of abating as the hours passed, its fury seeming to intensify rather than diminish according to normal meteorological patterns. Waves that should have been impossible given the wind's speed and duration crashed over our tilted platform with increasing violence, each impact driving us further from our stable position. The weather monitoring equipment registered pressure readings that contradicted everything in our databases, suggesting atmospheric conditions that had no precedent in the recorded history of Pelagio's prime. Food became an increasingly desperate concern as our situation deteriorated. The barnacles that had provided our primary source of protein were now underwater on the flooded sections of the platform, beyond reach of our reduced crew. The kelp forests that surrounded our position had been churned into an impenetrable tangle by the storm, making harvesting operations impossible even if we had possessed the manpower to attempt them. Our remaining emergency supplies consisted of nutrient paste that had passed its expiration date months ago, and water purification tablets that could not remove the taste of salt and corruption from our dwindling reserves. The crew's faith in Imperial rescue had evaporated completely as the reality of our abandonment became undeniable. Men who had served the Emperor faithfully for decades began questioning the wisdom of their loyalty, wondering aloud why the Imperium would leave loyal servants to die on a forgotten platform surrounded by hostile waters. The aquilas they had carved into the walls of their quarters seemed to mock their devotion, symbols of an empire that had apparently written them off as acceptable losses in the vast calculus of galactic governance. The platform's death throes continued through the night as more systems failed in cascading sequences that spoke of fundamental structural collapse. Warning lights that had flickered intermittently now failed completely, plunging entire sections into darkness, broken only by the emergency illumination that cast everything in hellish red shadows. The air recycling units struggled against humidity levels that exceeded their design specifications, their filters clogged with salt particles and vapors that carried the smell of decay and corruption. I stood in the tilted control room as dawn approached, watching readouts that told the story of our inevitable destruction. The platform continued its slow rotation into the waves, each degree of additional tilt bringing us closer to the point where no amount of human effort could prevent our complete submersion. The storm raged on with unnatural persistence, as if the very elements of Pelagio's prime had conspired to drag us down into the dark waters that surrounded our failing sanctuary. Storm's fury had not abated by the time I made the decision that would haunt whatever remained of my life. The platform's list had increased to nearly 15 degrees, transforming simple movement through the corridors into a treacherous exercise in balance and determination. Water sloshed constantly through the lower sections, carrying with it the detritus of our failing systems and the ever-present black sludge that seemed to multiply despite our efforts to contain it. The anchor chains demanded inspection. Every instinct screamed against venturing into the churning waters beneath our dying platform, but the alternative was accepting our slow descent into the abyss without understanding what forces were dragging us down. The engineering protocols were clear about structural assessments during catastrophic failure, though they had been written by men who assumed proper equipment and support crews, rather than a handful of desperate survivors clinging to a tilting platform in the middle of a hostile ocean. I retrieved my diving gear from the equipment locker, checking each component with the methodical care that might mean the difference between survival and becoming another casualty of Pelagio's prime's waters. The rebreather unit showed concerning wear patterns around its seals, the rubber gaskets cracked from months of salt air exposure and inadequate maintenance. The pressure gauges responded sluggishly when I tested them, their needles sticking at readings that could prove fatally inaccurate during an extended dive. The emergency illuminator felt pathetically inadequate in my hands as I examined its beam strength. The device had been designed for routine maintenance work in well-lit areas, not for penetrating the absolute darkness that lay beneath our platform. Its pale yellow glow seemed feeble against the storm-lashed waters that crashed over the deck plates, casting wavering shadows that danced with each lightning flash from the perpetual tempest above. The dive preparation took longer than it should have, my hands shaking from cold and exhaustion as I secured the breathing apparatus and checked the emergency ascent protocols. The water temperature readings from our remaining sensors indicated conditions that would sap body heat within minutes, transforming any extended dive into a race against hypothermia and equipment failure. The storm surge made timing critical, requiring me to enter the water during the brief lulls between wave sets that threatened to dash me against the platform's support struts. I entered the water from the platform's lowest accessible point, a maintenance platform that now sat barely 2 meters above the churning surface. The cold hit me like a physical blow, driving the breath from my lungs despite the rebreather's regulated air supply. The water was darker than I had expected, its black surface reflecting no light from the emergency illumination that still functioned on the platform above. The taste of salt and something else, something organic and corrupt, leaked through the seals of my diving mask. The descent toward the anchor chains required careful navigation through the forest of support struts that extended down into the depths like the legs of some massive metal spider. Each strut showed signs of marine growth and corrosion that spoke of years in the hostile environment, but there were other marks as well, deep scores in the adamantium that followed no pattern I could identify. The metal had been scraped and gouged by forces that possessed strength far beyond anything in the Imperial Engineering manuals. The Luminator's beam penetrated perhaps 5 meters into the murky water before being absorbed by particles and organic matter that drifted through the depths like snow in a perpetual blizzard. Visibility dropped to almost nothing as I moved deeper, forcing me to navigate by touch along the support struts while fighting the current that seemed determined to drag me away from the platform's protective structure. The water pressure increased with each meter of descent, creating a sensation of being slowly crushed by the weight of the ocean above. The first anchor chain emerged from the darkness like a revelation of Imperial engineering prowess. Each link was forged from adamantium alloy, thick as a man's torso, and designed to hold against forces that could tear lesser materials apart. The chain stretched down into the abyss at an angle that spoke of tremendous tension, its surface covered with marine growth that had accumulated over the years of our platform's operation. The metal showed the expected signs of corrosion and wear, but nothing that should have compromised its structural integrity. I followed the chain downward, my Luminator beam playing across each massive link as I searched for signs of damage or failure. The descent seemed endless, the chain disappearing into darkness that swallowed my light completely. The water grew colder as I moved deeper, and strange currents tugged at my diving gear with increasing insistence. The rebreather's recycling system worked harder to process the air I consumed, its mechanical sounds amplified by the water into rhythmic pulses that seemed to echo from the depths below. The severed end of the chain appeared without warning, its final link sheared through with precision that defied explanation. The cut surface was smooth as glass, showing none of the jagged tears or stress fractures that would indicate mechanical failure under load. Something had sliced through adamantium alloy as easily as a blade through parchment, leaving edges so clean they reflected my Luminator beam like mirrors. The implications struck me with the force of a physical blow, driving home the reality that our platform was being deliberately destroyed by forces beyond human understanding. I examined the severed chain with growing horror, running my gloved hands along the impossibly smooth cut surface while trying to comprehend what could have accomplished such destruction. The chain had been under tremendous tension when it failed, yet there were no signs of the explosive release that should have accompanied such a catastrophic break. The metal showed no stress patterns, no gradual weakening that might explain the failure. It had simply been cut, as if by some tool or weapon of unimaginable sharpness and power. The second anchor chain told the same story, its severed end floating in the current like an accusation against my assumptions about our predicament. The cut was identical to the first, showing the same impossible precision and complete absence of stress indicators. Whatever force had destroyed our anchoring system possessed capabilities that exceeded anything in Imperial technology, operating with a purpose and intelligence that transformed our situation from mechanical failure into something far more sinister. The water around me seemed to grow thicker as I examined the evidence of our deliberate sabotage, pressing against my diving suit with a weight that felt almost alive. Strange currents moved through the depths, carrying with them tastes and smells that leaked through my breathing apparatus despite its sealed design. The Luminator beam began to flicker intermittently, its power cell drained by the extended dive and the cold that sapped energy from all electronic systems. Something massive moved in the darkness beyond my light's reach, a presence so vast that I could perceive only fragments of its form as it passed through the water around me. The displacement of liquid created currents that buffeted my diving gear, threatening to tear me away from the severed anchor chain that had become my only reference point in the absolute darkness. The creature, if creature it was, brushed against me with a surface that felt like living stone, rough and warm despite the frigid water that surrounded us both. The encounter lasted perhaps seconds, though time seemed suspended in the crushing depths where light held no meaning and direction became a matter of faith rather than observation. I caught glimpses of something that defied description, a form so large that my mind refused to process its true dimensions. Appendages thicker than the platform's support struts moved through the water with fluid grace, their surfaces covered in growths that pulsed with their own internal rhythms. Eyes like burning coals regarded me from a distance that could have been meters or kilometers, their intelligence alien and malevolent beyond human comprehension. The panic that seized me was absolute and primal, overriding years of training and discipline, with the simple imperative to escape the presence that had turned its attention toward my insignificant form. I abandoned my investigation of the anchor chains and began my ascent toward the platform, fighting against water that seemed to resist my upward movement with increasing determination. The rebreather's alarm systems began their urgent warnings as my breathing rate spiked beyond the unit's capacity to process, filling my mask with the taste of recycled carbon dioxide and mechanical failure. The ascent became a nightmare of disorientation and equipment malfunction as the luminator finally failed completely, plunging me into darkness so absolute that up and down lost all meaning. I navigated by touch along the platform's support struts, my hands finding purchase on metal that vibrated with frequencies that seemed to originate from the depths below. The water pressure that should have decreased with altitude remained constant, as if the ocean itself was following me upward in defiance of natural law. I broke the surface gasping and shaking, hauling myself onto the maintenance platform with strength I had not known I possessed. The storm continued its assault on our failing refuge, but the familiar violence of wind and rain felt comforting after the alien presence that lurked in the depths below. The platform's list had increased noticeably during my dive, its tilt now approaching 20 degrees as whatever force had severed our anchor chains continued its systematic destruction of our stability. The crew quarters beckoned with the promise of answers I was not certain I wanted to discover. The flooding had reached the lower residential sections, forcing the survivors to abandon their personal belongings to the rising water. I waded through knee-deep brine that carried with it the accumulated possessions of men who had served the Emperor faithfully until abandoned to die on a forgotten platform. Personal effects floated in the contaminated water like grave goods, their significance reduced to obstacles in my search for information. The maintenance logs were stored in a section that remained above the waterline, though moisture had begun to seep through the sealed storage containers. The data slates showed signs of corrosion and water damage, their screens flickering as I accessed records that chronicled months of growing concern among the platform's technical staff. The entries painted a picture of systematic equipment failure and strange phenomena that had been dismissed or explained away by men desperate to maintain their sanity in an increasingly hostile environment. Previous riggers had documented encounters that mirrored my own experience in the depths below the platform. Sonar contacts that appeared and disappeared without explanation, massive shapes moving through the water at depths that should have been empty ocean floor. The reports grew increasingly desperate as the weeks passed, describing equipment failures that followed no logical pattern and maintenance requirements that exceeded the crew's ability to address. Several entries mentioned the black sludge that contaminated our drilling operations, noting its appearance in locations that defied containment protocols. The final entries in the maintenance logs spoke of crew members who had volunteered for diving operations and never returned to the surface. Their names were recorded with the bureaucratic precision that marked all Imperial documentation, but the circumstances of their disappearances were described in terms that suggested deliberate concealment of the truth. Equipment failures, navigation errors, and simple accidents were cited as explanations for the loss of experienced personnel who had performed similar operations hundreds of times without incident. The pattern that emerged from the scattered records was one of systematic predation, a campaign of destruction that had been conducted over months while the crew struggled to understand what was happening to their facility. The entity that lurked in the depths below had been hunting them with patience and intelligence, severing anchor chains and sabotaging equipment while remaining hidden from direct observation. The platform's gradual descent into the ocean was not the result of mechanical failure or natural disaster, but the deliberate action of something that wanted them dead. The water level had risen another meter while I examined the maintenance logs, claiming additional sections of the platform's lower levels with each passing hour. The surviving crew members had retreated to the upper structures, their faces showing the hollow-eyed desperation of men who understood that their situation had moved beyond hope of rescue or repair. The emergency supplies that remained were insufficient to sustain even our reduced numbers for more than a few days, and the platform's continued descent would soon make even those resources inaccessible. The storm showed no signs of abating as night approached, its unnatural persistence suggesting forces beyond mere meteorology at work in the skies above Pelagio's prime. The platform shuddered with each wave impact, its tilted structure groaning under stresses that increased with every degree of additional list. The support struts transmitted vibrations from the depths below, rhythmic pulses that spoke of something massive moving through the water with deliberate purpose. The platform's death rattles had become a constant symphony of tortured metal and failing systems by the time I understood the true nature of what stalked us beneath the waves. The list had reached 30 degrees, transforming every movement through the tilted corridors into a struggle against gravity that seemed determined to drag us into the flooded sections below. The emergency lighting cast everything in crimson shadows that danced with each impact of waves against our dying superstructure. The vibrations through the support struts had intensified throughout the night, no longer random pulses, but a deliberate rhythm that spoke of something massive circling our position with predatory patience. I pressed my palm against the nearest bulkhead and felt the measured beats transmitted through hundreds of tons of adamantium and steel, each pulse slightly stronger than the last. Whatever moved in the depths below was growing bolder, testing our defenses with increasing aggression. The sonar equipment that remained functional painted a picture of horror on its flickering screens. Massive contacts appeared at the edge of our detection range, shapes so large they registered as geological features rather than living creatures. The readings defied every classification in our technical manuals, showing a form that stretched across kilometers of ocean floor while moving with fluid grace through water that should have been empty darkness. The creature's dimensions exceeded the platform itself, dwarfing our industrial complex like a predator examining trapped prey. I realized with growing certainty that our months of isolation had not been abandonment by imperial authorities, but deliberate containment. The supply ships had stopped arriving not due to bureaucratic oversight, but because someone or something had ensured our complete separation from the outside universe. The entity below had been methodically cutting us off from all means of escape or communication, severing our anchor chains and sabotaging our equipment with surgical precision, while feeding on our growing desperation. The black sludge that contaminated our drilling operations took on new significance as I understood its true purpose. The substance was not a byproduct of failed extraction, but a secretion from the creature that lurked beneath our platform, marking its territory with chemical signatures that spoke of ancient hunger and patient malevolence. The drilling operations had never been intended to extract promethium from the ocean floor, but to penetrate the creature's domain and announce our presence to something that had waited in the depths for centuries. The crew's psychological deterioration accelerated as our situation became undeniably hopeless. Men who had maintained discipline through months of hardship now moved through their duties with the mechanical motions of the condemned, their eyes reflecting knowledge of approaching death that no amount of imperial training could suppress. The paranoia that had infected some of them proved to be justified, though their fears had focused on human threats rather than the alien intelligence that orchestrated our destruction. The platform's structural integrity reached critical failure as dawn approached, its support framework groaning under stresses that exceeded all design parameters. Bulkheads that should have remained watertight burst inward under pressure that came not from the storm above but from forces applied deliberately to our hull from below. The flooding accelerated beyond our ability to contain it, claiming entire sections of the facility with each passing hour as dark water rose through corridors that had never been intended for submersion. The emergency scuttling charges became my final desperate gambit as I realized that conventional escape was impossible. The platform carried enough explosive ordnance to destroy itself completely, denying whatever lurked below the satisfaction of claiming our facility intact. The detonation sequence required manual activation from multiple points throughout the superstructure, a failsafe designed to prevent accidental destruction that now demanded precise coordination from a crew reduced to barely functional survivors. I made my way through the tilted corridors toward the primary demolition control station, wading through contaminated water that had risen to chest height in many sections. The black sludge swirled through the brine in patterns that seemed almost purposeful, creating currents that tugged at my legs with surprising strength. The substance had multiplied beyond any natural rate of accumulation, coating every surface with organic residue that pulsed with its own internal rhythms. The demolition charges were located in reinforced compartments throughout the platform's structure, each one requiring individual activation before the primary sequence could be initiated. The manual override systems had been designed for emergency evacuation scenarios, assuming functional crew quarters and operational communication networks rather than the chaos of our current predicament. Several of the charges were already underwater, their control panels submerged beneath the rising flood that claimed more territory with each wave impact. The creature's presence became undeniable as I worked to activate the scuttling sequence. Massive tentacles, thick as the platform's primary support columns, began rising from the depths to wrap around our superstructure with deliberate precision. The appendages moved with fluid grace despite their enormous size, their surfaces covered in growths that secreted the black substance I had mistaken for drilling contamination. Each tentacle possessed strength that could crush adamantium like soft metal, applying pressure that caused our entire facility to groan in mechanical agony. The platform's death throes intensified as the creature tightened its grip on our structure. Support beams that had withstood decades of storm damage buckled and snapped under forces that no human engineering could resist. The emergency lighting failed in cascading sequences as power conduits were severed by the creature's embrace, plunging entire sections into darkness, broken only by the hellish glow of electrical fires that spread through flooded compartments. The first demolition charge activated with a thunderous roar that shook the entire platform, sending shockwaves through water and metal alike. The explosion should have been sufficient to breach the hull and begin our facility's final descent, but the creature's grip held us in place with strength that defied the laws of physics. The tentacles absorbed the blast's energy without visible damage, their alien flesh proving more resilient than the adamantium they crushed with casual indifference. I reached the primary control station as more charges detonated throughout the platform's structure, each explosion adding to the symphony of destruction that marked our facility's death. The control panels flickered with readings that made no sense according to any technical manual, showing stress patterns and structural failures that exceeded every safety margin by orders of magnitude. The creature was not simply destroying our platform, but consuming it, digesting our industrial complex with acids that dissolved metal as easily as organic matter. The final realization struck me with the force of a physical blow as I prepared to activate the remaining charges. The creature had not been feeding merely on human flesh during our months of isolation, but on something far more precious and sustaining. Our terror, our desperation, our growing certainty of abandonment and death had provided nourishment that no amount of physical consumption could match. The entity below was a predator of emotions as much as flesh, drawing sustenance from the psychological torment of its victims. The platform had been placed on Pelagio's Prime not as an extraction facility, but as bait for something that required specific conditions to feed. The promethium deposits that justified our presence were fictional, created by authorities who understood the creature's needs and were willing to sacrifice imperial citizens to satisfy them. We had been livestock from the moment we arrived, our lives measured not in service to the Emperor, but in the quality of fear and despair we could provide before our inevitable consumption. The creature's true form began to emerge from the depths as it prepared for the final phase of its feeding. What I had mistaken for tentacles were merely sensory appendages, extensions of something so vast that my mind refused to process its complete dimensions. The entity's body stretched across the ocean floor like a living mountain, its flesh incorporating elements of the sea bed itself, in a fusion of organic matter and geological structure that spoke of eons spent in patient hibernation. Eyes like burning stars regarded me from the darkness below, their intelligence ancient and malevolent beyond human comprehension. The creature had been waiting in the depths of Pelagio's prime since before the Imperium's expansion reached this forgotten world, sustained by periodic offerings of human consciousness and terror. The platform was merely the latest in a series of feeding stations, each one designed to provide the specific emotional nourishment that kept the entity dormant between meals. The final demolition charges detonated in sequence as the creature's maw opened beneath our platform, revealing depths that seemed to extend beyond the ocean floor into some dimension where light held no meaning. The explosions that should have destroyed our facility instead served as seasoning for the entity's feast, adding the sharp taste of violence and desperation to the meal it had been preparing for months. Our screams, our prayers, our futile resistance had been ingredients in a recipe that required precise timing and emotional intensity. The platform began its final descent not into the ocean, but into the creature's digestive system, our industrial complex sliding down a throat that could have swallowed Imperial battleships without effort. The water around us turned acidic as digestive enzymes began breaking down metal and flesh alike, dissolving the barriers between organic and mechanical matter with equal efficiency. The emergency lighting failed completely as the creature's internal bioluminescence replaced artificial illumination with patterns that spoke of alien intelligence and predatory satisfaction. I felt the platform's structure beginning to dissolve around me as the creature's digestive processes accelerated, reducing decades of Imperial engineering to component molecules that would feed the entity's continued existence. The black sludge that had contaminated our drilling operations revealed its true nature as a digestive fluid, preparing our facility for consumption while we mistook it for mechanical failure. The creature had been slowly dissolving our platform from within while we struggled to understand what was happening to our equipment. The crew's final moments were consumed by the entity along with their physical forms, their terror and despair, adding flavor to a meal that had been planned since the moment we arrived on Pelagio's prime. The men who had served the Emperor faithfully for decades became nothing more than seasoning for an appetite that measured time in geological epochs. Their screams echoed through the creature's digestive chambers as they realized the true purpose of their assignment. The platform's emergency beacon continued its automated distress signals even as the structure dissolved around it, broadcasting our final moments to a universe that had already written us off as acceptable losses. The transmission would eventually reach Imperial monitoring stations, where bureaucrats would file reports about equipment failure and natural disaster, while carefully omitting any reference to the creature that had orchestrated our destruction. The next group of victims was probably already being selected and briefed on their vital mission to extract Prometheum from the ocean world of Pelagio's prime. The creature's satisfaction was palpable as it completed its feeding, drawing the last traces of human consciousness into its alien digestive system, while the platform's remains settled into chambers that had processed countless similar meals over the millennia. The entity's hunger was satisfied for another cycle, its massive form beginning the slow process of returning to dormancy, while it waited for the next delivery of human livestock to arrive at its carefully prepared feeding station. The ocean above returned to its normal patterns as the creature settled back into the depths, leaving no trace of our platform's existence except for a few pieces of debris that would eventually wash ashore on distant continents. The storm that had battered us for days dissipated within hours, its unnatural persistence no longer required now that the feeding was complete. Pelagio's prime resumed its role as a forgotten world on the edge of Imperial space, waiting patiently for the next group of loyal citizens to be assigned to its non-existent Prometheum extraction operations. My consciousness faded as the creature's digestive acids completed their work, dissolving the last traces of Imperial presence from its domain, while absorbing the final fragments of human terror and despair that had sustained it through another feeding cycle. The entity had consumed not just our bodies, but our souls, adding our essence to the vast collection of victims that fueled its existence across the eons. The platform's lights disappeared beneath the waves as Pelagio's Prime returned to its eternal watch, ready to lure the next group of unsuspecting servants into the depths where ancient hunger waited with infinite patience.